You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Tony Bartels about the rapidly changing landscape of educational loan repayment. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Bartels graduated in 2012 from the Colorado State University Combined MBA-DVM program and is a VIN Foundation board member and student debt expert and an employee of the Veterinary Information Network, otherwise known as VIN. He and his wife, a small animal internal medicine specialist practicing in Denver, have more than $400,000 in veterinary school debt that they manage using federal income-driven repayment plans. By necessity, and now obsession, his professional activities include researching and speaking on veterinary student debt, providing guidance to colleagues on loan repayment strategies, and contributing to VIN Foundation resources. Beyond debt, his professional interests include small and exotic animal practice. He also enjoys fly fishing, ice hockey, camping, and exploring Colorado with his wife, Audra, daughter, Lucy, and their two dogs, Addie and Maggie. Welcome, Dr. Bartels.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Grice, for inviting me and talking about this, big and confusing topic.
Absolutely. Because in the wake of the new administration in 2025, the educational loan landscape has changed dramatically. NPR said, congressional Republicans are quietly working toward one of the most consequential overhauls in the history of the federal student loan program, one that will affect the lives of millions of borrowers. At the center of that overhaul is an effort to sunset most of the current student loan repayment plans and offer future borrowers a simple binary, pay the same amount every month or tie your payments to your income. Veterinarians in repayment are confused and worried, and students are unsure of what the future holds. Please help us understand.
Yeah, indeed. I think that breakdown is pretty accurate. And Congress and the president recently just signed a law that will do just that. So we are going to see some of the biggest changes to student loan borrowing and repayment in our lifetime here. So it's going to, we'll kind of tackle them for separate groups. So let's focus on those in repayment first, because they are going to sunset, as that article mentioned. They're going to sunset the income contingent, pay as you earn, and save repayment plans. So that was a collection of income-driven repayment options that had been available to borrowers for a number of years, a decade or more in many cases. And in ICR's case, it's been around since 1994. So we're kind of peeling back some of the original and updated versions of the income-driven repayment options. Thankfully, that's not going to happen immediately. So the sunsetting will take place by July 1st of 2028. So borrowers who are using those plans currently or would still like to use those plans can still do so until that July 1st of 2028 date. The big exception to that is SAVE. So the Saving on a Valuable Education Plan, or what was known as SAVE, created by the previous administration, was an update of the revised pay-as-you-earn plan. That one was blocked by a federal court last summer, and it's been kind of in limbo since then. And anybody that was using that SAVE plan, and by a lot of the estimates I've seen floating around out there, about 8 million borrowers are using the SAVE repayment plan. And it's quite likely a lot of veterinarians were in. I was in it, currently still in it. It was a super beneficial repayment option. But the court blocked it. and anybody that was using it was placed into a special forbearance where no payments were due, no interest has been accruing, but no forgiveness credit has been granted for that time since the court blocked it, which was July of 2024. Complicating some of these changes in the recent legislation is the fact that the Department of Education just said that they're going to end the interest-free benefit of the SAVE forbearance, and that's going to start August 1st, so August 1st of 2025. So, you know, just a few weeks from now, from when we're talking about this. So that is sent our colleagues kind of scrambling, those folks that are in the SAVE forbearance, to say, well, what plan do I choose now, right? And that's where I come back to the changes in the Big Beautiful Bill, right? So in that legislation, while they're sunsetting some of the previous options in 2028, they're also going to create a new one called the Repayment Assistance Program. And that is going to be available on July 1st of 2026. So we can start to piece together that we've got some calendar gaps, right? So if I'm in the SAVE forbearance and I need to choose another plan because I'm going to start accruing interest on my loans and I'd rather make payments and earn forgiveness credit, then I need to choose another plan. And I can still choose ICR, pay as you earn if I'm eligible, or an income-based repayment plan. Those are still all options that are available to me through July of 2028. I can't choose the RAP plan, the Repayment Assistance Program plan, yet until it's available in July 1st of 2026. So though that's kind of the quick version of what's happening in repayment.
How difficult is it to keep bouncing from one plan to another? Is it like a real pain in the ass, or what is that like?
Right now, it is a huge pain in the ass. So that's been one of the major challenges, is that, you know, through all the fits and starts and the changes and the repayment options, they actually paused processing of applications for a long time earlier this year. And the loan servicers are still experiencing quite a backlog of applications. So telling people that they now need to choose another repayment option because they're going to start accruing interest on those loans that were in SAVE means we've got the potential for millions of borrowers to now apply for another repayment plan all at once in a system that was already overstressed and severely backlogged. So there's a very good chance that even if you do apply for a different repayment plan right now, it's going to take some time for you to get that application processed. Now, Department of Education says they're ready for this. And, you know, if you go on studentaid.gov and apply and use your tax return, that they'll process it quickly. Again, quite likely it's going to be some time for that application to actually get processed. So you're going to need to pay really close attention to where that application is in the process and any updates and following up frequently to make sure that the plan that you applied for, you actually get your loans into. So deep breaths and a huge bag of patience when it comes to applying for one of those new or a different repayment plan, especially those of you that are going to seek a different forgiveness eligible option.
Do you have any idea whether those that are going to be in the SAVE plan, when that August 1st rolls around, if they have an application pending that has not been processed, what's going to happen? Do we know? Or is interest going to accrue even though they're trying to do the right thing?
Probably. So what usually happens when you apply for a plan and it takes longer than 60 days, they'll often put your loans into a forbearance, but that type of forbearance still accrues interest, right? Most likely, you're going to see interest accrue on your loans one way or another. The sooner you can get it into a forgiveness eligible plan, then the sooner you'll actually start earning forgiveness credit, and you know, with those payments that you make, so you're not accruing interest for no reason. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, you know, maybe there will be some retroactive application of the repayment plan to when you applied, if it takes them a really long time. Those are things we're going to have to kind of wait and see play out. And if so, maybe they'll require you to make a certain number of payments in order to qualify for that. I'm just kind of speculating there, but those are possibilities. I mean, the sooner you get the application in, you know, the sooner you get into the queue, hopefully it will get processed in a reasonable time. But I have some pretty low expectations that that's going to happen on a, normal timeline basis.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
Some other things that survived in the or concepts and features that survived the recent legislation. So forgiveness is still a thing, right? So student loan forgiveness is not going away. Any of the time that you've earned towards forgiveness will be applicable towards the plans that you choose going forward. So whether you end up in income-based repayment or the new repayment assistance program, any of the time that you've logged towards forgiveness will translate to that repayment plan you choose going forward. One of the other things that happened as part of the legislation, we had currently been living in a world where if you did receive student loan forgiveness, it wasn't treated as taxable income, at least at the federal level. And that there was a special exemption in place between 2021 and 2025, where anybody who received student loan forgiveness didn't have to pay any federal income tax on that amount forgiven. That was set to expire at the end of 2025, and it will expire, right? So this Congress did not choose to extend that particular tax exemption for student loan forgiveness. So anybody that does experience student loan forgiveness after the 2025 tax filing year will likely have to pay federal income tax and maybe even state income tax if you live in a state that taxes canceled debt on anything that's canceled or forgiven. Public service loan forgiveness was not touched. So public service loan forgiveness is still tax exempt as long as you're working for a qualifying employer using an eligible income-driven plan and making payments on those federal direct loan types that are eligible for public service loan forgiveness. So that was a bit of good news. The repayment assistance program's got some good features in it. The monthly payments are a little bit higher than they are under IBR. They're not as beneficial as the pay or save plans were, but it does contain a valuable unpaid interest subsidy. So if your income is such that the payment doesn't cover the interest on a monthly basis, then the Department of Education covers that interest that your payment is not covering. And in the repayment assistance program, they'll even make a payment of up to $50 towards your principal balance during those periods where your payments are not covering the interest. So you, instead of watching your balance grow, which was kind of a hallmark under previous versions of these income-driven plans, you can actually see your balance decrease even while your payments are less than the monthly interest that accrues. Of course, the negative trade-off of that is the repayment assistance program has a 30-year timeline before you're eligible for forgiveness. So prior versions of the income-driven plans, like pay as you earn, the new version of IBR, 20 years before you hit forgiveness. The old version of IBR and SAVE had 25-year timelines to reach forgiveness. Repayment assistance program requires 30 years before you reach forgiveness. So, and generally speaking, the longer you're in repayment, the more you're going to pay. So it's going to take longer to see that loan balance maybe disappear for some of us. And we're going to end up paying a little bit more because we're in repayment longer to reach forgiveness if we choose to use that repayment assistance program. The IBR plans will only continue to be eligible for those folks who have not received a loan after July 1st of 2026. So they're sunsetting a number of the previous income-driven plans. They're going to whittle it down to only IBR and this new repayment assistance program. But the only folks that will have the choice between repayment assistance program and IBR will be those folks who are not actively borrowing as of July 1st, 2026. For those new borrowers, future borrowers, those folks that are going to attend veterinary school or might be in veterinary school now and will still have one of those loans that they receive after July 1st of 2026, they will only be eligible for the repayment assistance program and a standard repayment plan. So no access to IBR. That's going to make repayment a challenge for some of our future graduating colleagues, right? It was, you know, while it was a little overwhelming with the number of options we had before, the number of options we had before were more beneficial than the single repayment assistance program option. But it's still, it's better than nothing, but it is a little more limiting. We can shift then to those folks who will be starting veterinary school after July 1st of 2026. Well, I guess maybe back up a step for our colleagues who are entering veterinary school this fall. So the fall of 2025, borrowing will not change for you, right? We've gotten a lot of concern and questions from those folks who have already decided where they're going to go to veterinary school and they're packing up their stuff and getting ready to start, you know, in just a couple of months here, not maybe even less. And they're worried that borrowing is going to change for them. And thankfully, there's this kind of transition phase where those folks that are starting those programs this fall will still be able to borrow under the existing borrowing rules, right? So that's good news. We don't have to turn their world upside down entirely. Now, those are going to be folks that when they graduate, they'll only have access to the repayment assistance program and the standard plan, but they won't have to worry about trying to navigate the new financing landscape that those folks who are starting veterinary school in the fall of 2026 are going to experience, right? That's going to be a completely different ballgame.
And by that, you mean the limits on borrowing?
Correct. So the updated legislation puts some limits on borrowing, even for programs like veterinary school, whereas before, those programs like that were unlimited in the amount of loans that you could obtain. And we're going to see a termination of the Direct Grad Plus loan program, which allowed you to borrow pretty much whatever you needed to get through veterinary school. And we're going to put a cap on the remaining loans, what are called direct unsubsidized loans, at $50,000 per year. So you'll only be able to borrow $50,000 per year to cover the cost of attendance of your veterinary program. Unfortunately, the majority of veterinary school seats have a total cost of attendance that are much higher than $50,000, right? So there's going to be kind of the first major issue is that people who previously had been able to fund their veterinary school educational costs entirely through federal student loans are now going to hit limits where they're only able to use up to $50,000 per year for to cover those costs using federal student loans. The rest of that they're going to have to obtain in a private loan, right? And private loans are complicated, right? They depend upon your credit history, credit score, maybe a co-signer that you are able to bring to the table. They all have differing terms, how they treat interest during school, if they compound or capitalize that interest along the way, if you have any minimum payments due. The interest rates can be highly variable. And even between being a fixed interest rate versus a variable interest rate, those are a possibility, but the interest rates themselves tend to be higher than the federal student loan interest rates, unless you have a cosigner or a pretty robust balance sheet and credit history. So that's going to complicate borrowing for our future colleagues. At Vint Foundation, we have a initiative we call Apply Smarter. And we really encourage pre-veterinary students to critically evaluate which schools they're applying to based on cost, right? And trying to apply to those schools that give you the lowest cost profile, right? Have the lowest cost of attendance, right? So that's normally your in-state school or one of the, you know, handful of schools that allow you to change your residency status after the first year and get that in-state tuition rate. That will limit how much you have to potentially obtain in private loans and will greatly simplify repayment for you, as well as allow you to navigate your veterinary career path much easier, right? Those private student loans are very limiting, right? So, I mean, I can foresee a lot of folks not only being limited in being able to attend veterinary school, but even doing things like internships, residencies after veterinary school. If you have a high private student loan balance, that can often be very difficult to navigate.
What about parental plus loans? They did some changing to those as well.
They did. They put some significant limits on those. Those were previously unlimited. Now $20,000 per year, up to a maximum of $65,000. But the important thing to note there, the Parent Plus loans are only available to parents who are paying for their child's undergraduate education, right? So they wouldn't affect paying for veterinary school. Where I'm kind of seeing it trickle in are veterinarians who are actually now using Parent Plus loans to pay for their kids' undergraduate educations, right? And they're still maybe in some cases paying back their own federal student loans, right? So now they're going to potentially have some limits on the types of loans that are able to use to help their kids get through undergraduate education. In addition to the $50,000 annual limit for veterinary school, there's a maximum of $200,000 that you can borrow for a professional program. So, I mean, that makes sense if you're only going to do a four-year veterinary program at $50,000 a year. $50,000 a year is going to put you at the $200,000 limit for a four-year veterinary program. However, where it gets complicated is if you obtain a graduate school degree before you go to veterinary school, whatever amount of loans you use to pay for that graduate school education will count against that $200,000 limit. Right. So oftentimes we see veterinarians who will pursue maybe a master's of anatomy or something like that before they go to veterinary school, maybe to improve their veterinary school application or something like that. If you spent $35,000, $45,000, $50,000 on your graduate school degree and you then get into veterinary school, well, now you only have $150,000 available to you to get through veterinary school, which is going to make that more difficult. You'll have to rely more on those private student loans that are a little bit more complicated to manage and more expensive to repay.
So because we've got the total cost of attending school, there is at least a little bit of wiggle room for people to, which they already do, but, you know, share housing, those kinds of things. Do you know what the 2025 or the 2024-2025 academic year average veterinary school tuition was in the United States
I don't know that number off the top of my head, but the it differs between the in-state versus
absolutely
the non-in-state ones. I don't have that number. I believe the AABMC might have that
right
on their website and collection data, but I don't have that readily available at my fingertips. I do know that the average reported debt for veterinarians who graduated with debt from veterinary school was $202,000 in 2024, right? So kind of right at that level, right? Now that average, again, encompasses folks who graduate from in-state schools, folks who graduate from private schools, right? So there's clearly folks that are below that and a good chunk of those who are above that, right? So it's going to be more important than ever for us to try to really get the word out to our future applicants to try to avoid some of those more expensive seats, especially if they have to borrow, right? I mean, if you don't have to borrow, then it's not really that big of an issue. But if you do, which, you know, 80% of veterinary students are borrowing for veterinary school, avoiding those private loans as much as possible is going to be the goal for future veterinary students.
Wow. So as those that are in repayment right now are just kind of sitting back in shock, or maybe they've actually gotten some things in the mail saying now their payment's going to be this incredibly large amount that they cannot pay. Do you have advice for them?
I do. So it's as confusing and uncertain as the system seems right now, and it is very, there is always a repayment option that should result in a manageable monthly payment for you, right? So the income-driven plans are still available, right? So if you're getting a monthly payment back from your loan servicer that just doesn't make any sense or seems way too high compared to what you're bringing home in terms of income, then something's probably wrong, right? So we want to make sure that we review, well, how did they calculate my payment, right? And, you know, what plan do they think I applied for, right? Which plan will actually work best for me? And then kind of taking a step back, well, which plans am I eligible to use? Right. And that's where on BIN Foundation, on the Student Debt Center, we have some tools available that are designed specifically for veterinarians for them to answer those sorts of questions. Right. So they're free. Anybody can use them, but they're designed specifically for veterinarians and veterinary students. But if you grab a student aid data file, which is kind of the repository of all your borrowing history with the Department of Education, you can grab a student aid data file from studentaid.gov. It's an ugly looking text file. You can upload it to the BIN Foundation My Student Loans tool. And we have an income-driven repayment eligibility tab that shows you, here are the income-driven options that you have available to use. And again, coming back to that, you know, phase out or, you know, transition phase, a lot of these plans are still on the books, right? So you can use them in the short term to get yourself a manageable monthly payment. And then hopefully by the time we get to see RAP release the repayment assistance program next summer, you can then compare, hey, well, maybe this will be a better version for me, or I'm going to transition over to the eligible income-based repayment option that I have left.
You know, you make it sound so doable. I'm sure there are people right now who are saying, oh, and taking a deep breath and just feeling like, oh my God, maybe I can do this after all.
Hopefully. I mean, that's the goal, right? I mean, you know, right. We want to try to limit the amount of panic and anxiety to the extent possible. You know, student loans are just an emotionally charged item of many of our balance sheets, right? And the key is really to not let them affect too much of our overall financial wellness, right? And thankfully, with the federal student loans, I like to say they're the most flexible but really, really annoying debt that you're ever going to have. But if we can understand them a little bit better, we can minimize those annoying parts and maximize the flexibility pieces, so we don't have to let them kind of derail our overall, you know, family and financial goals.
Share with us some of the resources that are available on VIN where people can, you know, as their eyes are glazing over, but they've heard there's hope. You've done a really good job of providing hope. Some resources where they can read and slowly and reread again.
Absolutely. So vinfoundation.org, we've got tons of content on there. When it comes to student loans, we've got three primary initiatives: Apply Smarter for pre-veterinary students, Borrow Better for veterinary students, and Repay Wiser for veterinarians in repayment. So all of those banners contain a whole host of content under them that you can use to get more familiar with your student loans and the options that you have available to you, whether you're borrowing in repayment or considering applying to veterinary school. We have the Vinn Foundation Student Debt Center that I mentioned is kind of the flagship resource for veterinarians and veterinary students to understand their student loans and their repayment options. On there, we have three tools: the in-school loan estimator for pre-vets and veterinary students, the My Student Loans tool for anybody that has student loans, and the loan repayment simulator to help people navigate what their repayment options are. We are in the process of updating a lot of those to reflect the current changes. But again, some of the data that's or the plans that are on there are still relevant because they are still available for you to use and can be used as a short-term planning tool. We also have the student debt message board area that's tied to the Student Debt Center. So if you need personalized assistance, we will provide that to any veterinarian and veterinary student. You don't have to be a Vinn member to use that, but it's a message board forum. For anybody that's familiar with Vinn, the message boards are kind of the heart and soul there. We borrowed from that concept and we created a student debt specific message board area where veterinarians, veterinary students can post questions that they have, and we walk through them like we do clinical cases, right? So we do what I call a physical exam of your student loans, looking at the data that you provided in the Student Debt Center and come up with some treatment plans for you to use to approach your student loans. And if you have further questions and want to come back, you can post additional questions in that message board area. So anybody can use that. We do need you to create a username and password. Your Vinn username and password will work if you have one. But if you don't, then you can create one. And again, it's free for anybody to use that particular piece through Vinn Foundation.
Bless you, Dr. Bartels. I just cannot imagine the amount of anxiety that you have quieted by providing this information. You know, you live and breathe this every day, but there are a lot of veterinarians out there, and equine veterinarians in particular, work many, 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 many hours, don't make a lot of money sometimes, and, you know, they come home maybe, look at what came in the mail, and they're just, you know, on the edge of the cliff, right? And so what a difference I think you've made by explaining this. And I thank you so very much for coming on and doing so.
Well, thank you. Thank you for those kind words. And absolutely. And you know, like you mentioned before, I'm kind of living this too. And I'm actually married to a veterinarian who fits that description you said exactly, who, you know, is just way too busy to think about this student loan stuff. So, I mean, that's kind of how I approach it, just trying to break it down enough to help you manage it effectively, but then get, you know, get back to what you love doing, right? Which is practicing veterinary medicine. So hopefully we're doing that. And that's what we're striving to do. So please use those resources and give us any feedback that you have so we can keep improving them and making them better and better.
Yeah, it is an amazing thing that you and your colleagues have done, and what a difference you're making for the veterinary world. I got to tell you, it's huge. It's really huge.
Well, I appreciate
thank you so much.
Thank you again for highlighting this and helping to get the word out. And we look forward to helping in any way we can.
Yeah. Thank you all that are listening today to the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change, and don't be too scared.